Officials in Rankin County, Mississippi, are urging swimmers to stay safe this July 4th after a man's body was recovered from a reservoir, an apparent accidental drowning. In Fall River, Massachusetts, a young woman was found drowned in a public pool. People there say swimmers often jump a fence to cool off. Today, we want to look at the tough subject of drowning. Drownings are rare, but you might remember last year we spoke with Francesca Pia, a legendary New York lifeguard, after two sets of twin girls drowned in separate incidents in backyard pools in Massachusetts, and six teenagers drowned during a gathering in Louisiana. At that time, Francesco said, one big problem is we're looking for the wrong warning signs. As a lifeguard in New York's crowded Orchard Beach back in the 60s, he was filming a simulated drowning when he caught a real drowning and rescue on film. He decided to hire a college student to film over several summers, and that led to the groundbreaking film, The Reasons People Drown.
These two children are drowning. Their parents are only 10 feet away. And until I rescued the young boy and girl, their parents thought they were playing in the water. They were shocked because their children were drowning and didn't call out for help.
Francesco Pia changed the way people think about drowning. And as we head into this fourth, we thought we'd hear again his explanation of what the accepted wisdom was and what made him question it.
I recall my own feelings of anxiety when I first started working as a lifeguard at Orchard Beach. Essentially, it was on-the-job training. You sat on the chair with a senior guard. He would identify a drowning person, point, and then just toss you off the chair at that person. And drowning was described as convulsive agitation that advertised the fact that the person was drowning. And the recognition of the drowning person was thought to be self-evident.
And this was reinforced by films that we saw and television shows. People who drowned flailed their arms around and waved at you and yelled, help.
That is correct. That was the popular conception, which is really a misconception.
And what'd you find?
Well, I found a number of rather fascinating bits of data. We learned at Orchard Beach not to expect the people to call out for help or to wave for help. That is a myth. Also, it was very clear that in nearly all the drownings and near drownings and rescues that we captured that summer, and there were several hundred of them, it was the rule rather than the exception that there were people surrounding the drowning person that did not realize the drowning was occurring.
Because why? Because people get actually quiet?
Well, they were expecting that when a person is in an emergency situation, typically they will call out for help. Drowning, by definition, is suffocation in the water. They're not able to get enough air in to continue breathing, so speech doesn't come into play.
There is a physical activity, though, and you came up with the phrase, the instinctive drowning response, sort of flapping arms out to the side and trying to push up and down vertically, more like climbing a ladder.
I asked myself the question, what is the drowning person trying to accomplish? Since they can't float, since they're drowning, by definition, they can't swim, so they can't tread water and kick their legs. The only limbs that are left are the arms. In an attempt to use the water as a solid platform that they can press down on in order to lift their mouth out of the water in order to continue to breathe. Whether persons we were rescuing were males or females, children or adults, once they got into water above their head, this instinctive response occurred.
Well, and so you found that people who are drowning most often do so quietly? One of the most disturbing things to read was that you had film of a little 12-year-old boy, his eyes tracking someone, you know, swimming by him, but he's not able to speak. But also you found it happened so quickly. How quickly?
The struggle of the drowning person ranges from 20 seconds to 60 seconds. So in the case of the 20-second struggle, there was a parent who was taking his 2 or 3-year-old child and was about to step off the drop. We whistled him in. He kind of just waved us off. He stepped off the shelf. His instinctive drowning response kicked in. The lifeguards had already started their rescue as this man was walking off the shelf. So I was able to look down at my watch to calculate the amount of time that the child struggled. 20 seconds, which is the shortest period of time that I observed before he submerged and the lifeguard reached him at the point of submersion. The 60-second struggle occurred where a young adolescent male, he was about 200 yards away from the nearest lifeguard stand. So we saw him run down the beach. It was low tide. We just knew that he was going to be in trouble very shortly. Again, I hit the timer on my watch. The lifeguard took off. This young man struggled, and at 60 seconds, he went down, and the lifeguard grabbed him. So it's that window of time that's important for lifeguards to realize.
Well, and with children in particular, there's also a bewilderment. Dr. Julie Gilchrist, who's with the CDC, says children who've almost drowned say that, well, they just went underwater and then went to sleep. They don't even really know what's happening. It's that quick.
Anecdotally, we hear reports about that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then we should say, of course, we just saw a couple of cases where, you know, this is not what happened. Those poor teenagers down in Louisiana were screaming for help. But more than likely, you're saying what, Francesco Pia, that that's not what we should look for. We should be looking for something very quiet. That means that we should be looking a lot.
That is absolutely correct. And that goes for lifeguards. And that goes for parents who are supervising children at waterfronts.
What should parents be doing that you see them they're not doing?
Well, first of all, parents have to realize that drowning is a leading cause of accidental death and injury for children ages 1 to 4. So in the same way that parents child-proof a home, they need to child-proof their backyard pool if they have one. The height of the fence should be at a minimum of 4 feet. There shouldn't be a space larger than 4 inches in between the fencing. There should be a self-closing, self-latching gate and a child-proof lock. There should be no toys left on the deck of the pool because the toys will serve as an attractant.
You also say parents should use touch-reach supervision, meaning what?
Touch supervision was initially a Canadian concept. Whenever a child is in the water, the parent should be in the water with them within touch supervision, meaning that they can just reach out and touch the child.
You're watching for what, this funny dog paddle?
If they observe their child doing what appears to be a quote-unquote dog paddle or playing around in the water, and the child is not moving in any direction, that is a dead giveaway to the parent that the child is in trouble. These struggling arm movements, which are instinctive, which sometimes look like dog paddling, means the child is drowning.
Welcome back to our conversation about drowning. Tough subject. According to government statistics, 2 children a day drown, 1 a day in a pool. The conventional wisdom is that someone drowning yells and calls for help, but that's not the rule. Something Francesco Pia demonstrated in the 60s when, as a lifeguard at Orchard Beach in the Bronx, he made a documentary about how people succumb quickly and often quietly. People are listening to him now, but last summer we asked what it was like before they did.
One of my lifeguards described me, and I think very aptly, as a pessimist who was determined to be an optimist. Change is difficult. What has happened is that when people take a look at the films, parents then realize the necessity for continual supervision. With backyard pool drownings, it's not necessarily a lack of supervision on the parents' part, but rather a lapse in supervision, and that lapse is generally 5 minutes or less.
Hmm. Yeah. 20 seconds for a child to drown. There's other video that's been captured on security cameras. One little 4-year-old, he's playing with everybody in the pool. He's doing that dog paddle, and then literally within a second, he's face down in the water. 1 second, he just quits. What do lifeguards do given that 20 seconds? What are you not seeing more of on the chair from lifeguards?
Well, it's a combination of the lifeguards and the supervisors. We entrust 15, 16, and 17-year-olds. They are the difference between a routine rescue and a needless fatality. I always feel that it is the job of the lifeguard supervisor to be out on the deck and to make sure that they are continually scanning and that the lifeguards are given frequent surveillance breaks. You cannot put a human being up on a chair for 2, 3, or 4 hours without a break and expect them to detect a struggle that can last between 20 to 60 seconds.
Yeah. You say no cell phones, no friends at the lifeguard chair.
Absolutely. And, you know, what was quite disturbing to me was seeing this new phenomenon of lifeguards with smartphones texting and carrying on conversations. There is absolutely no place in lifeguarding for any lifeguard at any time to have his or her personal cell phone with them on the chair and using it.
Francesco Pia, you know, we're about to hear that many parents are closing up backyard pools. As we said, drownings are rare, but they're just too horrible. Have you been hearing that?
I have. There are some pediatricians that feel that the only safe backyard pool is one that is filled with sand.
Francesco Pia, again, a former lifeguard and consultant on drowning prevention. Francesco, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
There are more than 9 million backyard pools, and as they multiply, so do drownings. The U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission says an estimated 4,400 children age 4 and under are treated for near drownings. That's twice as many as in 2007. Too many for parents. Real estate agents report that some families with young children won't even look at a home with a pool. There's a move to beef up safety requirements. Here in Massachusetts, for instance, a law requires that pools be surrounded by a fence, but it doesn't have to be in addition to the fence around the house. And we hear anecdotally about people filling in their pools, as Francesca Pia said, or shutting them down. Alyssa Gordon is from Connecticut. She has 3 girls, and she told us last year why she decided to shut down her pool.
We made a decision to close down our pool, really in response to feeling as if we were having to be incredibly vigilant, not even so much our own children, but the fact that so many people that we would invite over with their young children who were friends of our children, I think people get the sense that when they're in a social environment around a neighborhood pool, that it's very different than being at, let's say, a public pool where you're expecting lifeguards to watch your children. And you forget when you're in that social situation that you still need to be very vigilant.
You've now got your pool, what, empty? Describe your pool. How is it being kept now?
Our pool has always had a lock gate fence around the pool itself, in addition to the fence that we have around our property. But for the last, I would say, almost 4 years now, the pool has also had no water in it and has a cover over it. And in addition, we also have a hose set up to drain any additional rainwater that may fall into the pool. It doesn't take that much water to,
right,
you know, to really create a pool of water on the top of that surface of that cover.
So you decided to take these measures. Did you ever consider what the Consumer Product Safety Commission recommends, not just the fence around the pool, but maybe also backdoor alarms so parents would know when a child is headed outside, or sensors to sound an alarm if someone falls in a pool to make you feel more secure?
Yes, we do not have a sensor in the pool, but we do have back door alarms on all of our back doors. So should a door open, there is a sound that's emitted.
But it still wasn't enough.
Well, I think we are, you know, we're not paranoid people around the water. We're actually sailors. We own a boat.
In fact, you're vacationing on a boat right now.
Yeah, you're speaking to me on a boat out of Shelter Island, New York right now. You know, so we are very aware of water safety. And we are very comfortable on the water with our children. However, I have to say, you know, the biggest motivation for looking at closing the pool originally was really had to do with not even so much our own children, because we did feel that we had a sense of vigilance and a sense of layering in terms of the protection. It really had to do with it not being fun to play lifeguard in social settings.
Yeah. That's Alyssa Gordon. She's from Connecticut and made the decision to close up her pool because of concerns about the safety for kids. Alyssa, thanks for speaking with us.
Thank you.